From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's called Mind Power. Here's what's happening. President Donald Trump is reportedly planning to send nuclear bombers to the Korean Peninsula as tensions in the region reach breaking point. North Korea and the U.S. have been teetering on the brink of war for months after Kim Jong-un carried out a series of controversial missile attacks and land launches. We shall see what happens. The Food and Drug Administration is investigating a multi-state outbreak of listerias linked to soft, raw milk cheese made by a company called Volto Creamery. Two deaths, six hospitalizations have been reported since September 1st in Connecticut, Florida, New York, and Vermont. Listerias is a very serious infection generally caused by contaminated food. It's particularly dangerous to pregnant women, the elderly, and those with weakened immune systems. The discovery of missing links between earthquake fault shows how a magnitude 7.4 earthquake could rupture in the same tremor underneath Los Angeles, Orange, and San Diego counties, according to a new study. Now, such an earthquake, they say, would be 30 times more powerful than the magnitude 6.4 earthquake that caused the 1933 Long Beach earthquake, which killed 120 people then. Stan Dale, expert on earthquakes, with us. Stan, how serious is this talk?
Well, look, the USGS runs on statistics and some data that they collect, and try as hard as they can, they're not going to be able to tell you exactly when. And most Californians have been raised on the fear of the big one or a large earthquake in their area, you know, their portion of the San Andreas Fault. My suggestion is take the advice that they're telling you that it could happen soon and, you know, prepare an emergency kit to take with you to work or keep in your car and do the same at home and read up on what you need to do to prepare for an earthquake to rebuild and survive whatever comes. It's not the end of the world if you have an earthquake.
Is it going to happen, Stan, regardless of timing?
Yeah, there will be several. I see, you know, a number of faults, and I've read the USGS reports on them as well. And I think we're going to see a series of pretty serious earthquakes, and perhaps the great big one up in the Juan de Fuca plate eventually, Richter 9+. But to me, the solution is don't panic.
Don't panic.
It's like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't panic.
And be prepared. Stan, thank you. Stan's website, standeyo.com. Well, Radio Shack has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection for the second time in just over 2 years, putting the future of that nearly 100-year-old electronics retailer in doubt. Once known as the place to go to buy batteries and obscure electronic parts, heck, I used to go there as a kid all the time to make little things for radios. Radio Shack has struggled to hang on to customers as more people shop online, and it's been in the process of closing 200 stores. And Staples, more closings coming there. The office supply store reported a $548 million loss and a 3% drop in sales in the fiscal fourth quarter that ended in January. They will close 70 of their 1,600 stores. Sign of the times. The heaviest woman in the world underwent successful weight loss surgery. The surgery was performed in Mumbai on a 1,000-pound-plus woman. A burger-flipping robot has just completed its first day on the job at a restaurant in California, replacing humans at the grill. Oh, boy. Flippy has mastered the art of cooking the perfect burger and has just started working at Cali Burger, which is a fast food chain. The robotic kitchen assistant, which its makers say can be installed in just 5 minutes, is the brainchild of a company called Miso Robotics. China developing an advanced new spaceship capable of flying in low Earth orbit and landing on the moon. Another bold step for the Chinese space program. At coasttocoastam.com, take a look at a story about a pair of astronomers from Harvard suggesting that the mysterious space phenomena known as fast radio bursts could be coming from aliens. Let's check in with Seth Shostak, of course, who's the senior astronomer at SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Seth, tell us about your thoughts on this story, and what exactly are these fast radio bursts?
Well, I wish I could answer that latter question, George, because everybody wants to know what they are, and so far nobody's quite sure. The one thing that you can be sure about, they pump out an enormous amount of energy in essentially an eye blink's time. One was recently kind of narrowed down to a spot in a very far away galaxy, billions of light years away, and if it's still strong enough for us to pick up with our radio telescopes here and coming from that far away, it's really powerful. But what these two guys at Harvard are suggesting, you know, maybe it isn't a natural phenomenon. Maybe it's a souped-up transmitter that some aliens are using to power their spacecraft to send giant sailing ships from one star to another.
Wouldn't that be exciting? Now, what does SETI do when they hear these kinds of stories? Do they try to pinpoint the location that these people are talking about?
Well, yes, indeed, and not just SETI astronomers, but all radio astronomers have tried to pinpoint where these fast radio bursts are coming from, because that's the first step in understanding what they are. But you got to remember the history, and the history is every time you find something a little odd in space, there's going to be some people who will say, hey, you know, it's probably alien activity, and it might not be.
One day, maybe, we will find out. Seth, thank you so much. Up next, G. Edward Griffin joins us again on Coast to Coast. Creature from Jekyll Island. We will talk about the Federal Reserve, the stock market, and so many other things that are happening on this planet next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. He is one of my personal favorite guests on the program. G. Edward Griffin is a writer, documentary film producer with many successful titles to his credit. Edward is listed in Who's Who in America, is well known because of his talent for researching really difficult topics and presenting them to all of us in terms that we can all understand. He has dealt with such subjects as the ancient Earth history, the Federal Reserve, terrorism, the history of taxation. He's the founder and president of American Media, the Reality Zone, the Cancer Cure Foundation, and the Freedom Force International. We're going to talk with G. Edward Griffin tonight and take your phone calls next hour about a number of subjects that are near and dear to all of us. But first of all, G. Edward Griffin, welcome back to Coast, sir.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
I hear you've been all over the map lately.
Well, I guess that's true. I just got back from Acapulco the other day, and as you can well imagine, I wasn't down there for vacation. It was a weird group of people I feel very comfortable with. They call themselves anarchists. I have a little bone to pick as to whether their definition and mine is the same, but anyway, they're very libertarian oriented people, and they had an event called Anarchapulco. So when I was invited to go, I had to go. So that's where I was just a week ago.
Edward, I'm still getting emails from people who love your book, Creature from Jekyll Island, which is a second look at the Federal Reserve. I want to talk with you about a lot of subjects tonight. I was telling our executive producer, Lisa Lyon, a few weeks ago. I said, you know, it's time that we get the G. Edward on the program. This world is upside down, and maybe you can make some sense out of it. But I want to ask you some current events with your perspective, if I can. And first and foremost, President Trump coming up to his 2 months now that he's been in office. But I want your assessment on what the heck you think is going on in Washington. Is this a witch hunt? Or I mean, what's going on? Are they going to let this guy try to be the president? Or are they going to go after him? What's happening here?
Well, I wish, you know, I hope that when people hear me speak, they don't get the mistaken idea that I have a crystal ball. But I have had a pretty good record of predicting things, mainly because I try to look at future events not as some kind of a mysterious occurrence, but really a continuum of what's going on today. You know, it's not hard to predict the future if you know where you are today and you know where you were in the past. You just draw a little mental straight line between those two points and project them into the future. And you can say, if there's no major change that's brought about, then this is where we're headed. And you know what? That's where we're going to end up. So I use that metric in looking to the future. And when the issue comes up, what are they going to do? Are they going to let Trump be the president or what? The question is, who are they? And that brings us to the reality, that they who have control over these things are mostly unknown people, or at least we don't think of them as having that kind of power of determining things. But they have the influence, the political connection, the monetary leverage, and the international connections to make things really happen, much more importantly than the people who vote. And no, so let's get specific. What am I talking about? They are the ruling elite, in my view.
I think you're right.
Now, yeah, that who are the ruling elite? Are those the people we send to Congress? No, they're not. Our congressmen are very obedient and sensitive to the ruling elite who remain behind the scenes. We send letters to our congressmen, and they don't. They read them occasionally. They tally them, but the letters they really read are the ones that contain big checks. That's what they read, are the checks.
That gets their attention, doesn't it?
Yeah, that gets their attention. And I think anybody that's been watching world events lately knows that most of the elected representatives, not just in our government, but all supposedly democratically elected systems, most of those politicians are more attuned to their big donors, the power brokers, than they are to the electorate. And in fact, it seems to be the task of the politicians nowadays is to fool the electorate, to make them think something that's happening, when in fact it's just the opposite. So our representatives don't represent us anymore. They represent the ruling elite. And they consider us to be more or less in the way. We're like the cattle. We're the animals on the farm. They have to treat us okay. They have to feed us. They have to keep us happy, keep us working so we can produce ham or beef or whatever we happen to be. So when the day comes for slaughter, and by that I mean the income tax or whatever, we still have enough. We still have enough worth to them. But I really think the elite look at the average electorate kind of like they're farm animals, and that we're all just on this big farm. So who are they? Well, let's just take a look at the U.S. There's one name that keeps coming up over and over and over again, and I think he's kind of a classic member of this elite. His name is George Soros.
That's right.
Now, we know that George Soros is behind, financially behind, most, if not all, of these so-called revolutionary groups that are out there, you know, breaking windows and massing 1,000 or 2,000 people in the streets, calling for an overthrow of the government and so forth.
And he's a billionaire. Well, he's got the money to play with, doesn't he, Edward?
He's not only got the money to play with, but he's got friends in the banking system that can make sure that he continues to get the money to play with.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got contacts at the highest levels in the banking system, let's say at the Federal Reserve, you're going to be in a position to make a lot of money that the average person cannot make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of channeling money, laundering money, if you will, taxpayer money, or siphoning it off of the free market, which there's no such thing anymore, but what appears to be the free market, siphoning it out of the market into the pockets of favored players in the game, so they can then spend this money by the millions and billions to bring about social and political revolution. And that is my answer to the question. They are these hidden forces who are using a classic strategy of revolution from within. And I was thinking, how would I deal with this tonight if you were to bring that topic up, hoping that you would. And I suddenly remembered that back in, I think it was the late 70s, I made a presentation in the living room of my home, and it was recorded on black and white 16 millimeter film, and it was banging around for a little while, and somebody told me that it was up on YouTube. I didn't put it up on YouTube. Somebody did. And I looked at it, and it almost knocked my socks off. First of all, I was just a young punk back there, and if you look at it, and I hope you and your audience do look at it, you're going to be disgusted with this punk with his skinny tie. He's so filled with himself, and it's me. And I'm talking about revolution. And I had just completed an extensive course of study with my experience with the communists. I had to go back a little bit. Back in the 60s, I became interested in communism and fascism and Nazism, and I was studying them to see what was common to them. And I hung out in the communist bookstore in Los Angeles quite a little bit with the comrades down there, and they thought they had a live recruit. But I was doing research, and I read all these books, and I really got into it. I went to their so-called study groups. They were kind of recruiting sessions, you know. And I learned all about these things, and I decided I had to tell people about it. So I made this film called More Deadly Than War. And I looked at this film And I thought, my gosh, I had forgotten about it. And it was so on target with what is going on today, George. It looked like I had just made it last week and was talking about what was happening in the streets of America today. So the point I'm trying to make here is that everything important that's happening today is right out of the classic Marxist-Leninist revolutionary handbooks. It's the things I studied in the 1960s in the communist bookstore.
Is it going to slow down at all, though, Edward? I got to tell you, I'm not alone here. People are already 2 months in. They're exhausted about all this. I mean, I love the United States. I love this country. Spent 9 years in the Navy. I would do anything for it. I want to see this country move on to grow, to protect ourselves. I think we have a problem with North Korea. We'll talk about that sometime tonight with you. But I want to see this country flourish, and it just seems like we're being dragged down with all this minutia. It's absolutely unbearable. I mean, I have heard people so fed up, they want to just leave. And it's relentless. I mean, whether you like Donald Trump or not, that's not what I'm talking about. I love the United States.
No, that has nothing to do with it,
that's
really.
Right. Yeah. Something is going on.
Yeah, well, the thing that's going on, as I mentioned, is classic. And let me explain that part of it. These people in the streets, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people, if they got 10,000 people, they can mobilize that because they pay most of them to go. If you really want to know what's behind these demonstrations, go two or three blocks away from the demonstration and look at the buses lined up as far as the eye can see. Those people were transported there. They were paid to go there. They were given lunch to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Who did that? You see, most of those people don't even know why they're there. Now they do
They're just holding signs, chanting and screaming.
Holding signs, and they think maybe they're on the right side, but it's like a little holiday for them, you know? This is a phony revolution. It's not real, but it's following the strategy of what the comrades call pressure from above and pressure from below. And the idea is that they put the masses into the street and create the appearance of mass dissent, mass discontent, mass revolution, mass violence, and they play it on television, and they scare the socks off of everybody. Think, what's happening to our country? It's falling apart. What are these idiots doing out there? And they get all nervous. And then there are people at the higher levels, in government, in the media, and in the schools. They do their part. This is pressure from above now. And they start calling for reform. And they start calling for some of the things that the masses at the bottom have been saying on their slogans and so forth. And the average person looks down below, sees the masses breaking windows, clamoring, shooting, killing, and so forth. Then they look up above and they read the editorials from their media masters and the politicians speaking on these things. And they think, oh my gosh, the world has gone crazy. Everybody wants this. And they feel helpless. They feel outnumbered. They don't realize that we're talking about 1/100 of 1% of the population, but they're so well orchestrated and so well funded that it seems like a genuine revolution. Now, the payoff is that this is coming from the so-called left, and it's clear that it is. But there are people who really, at the elite level, are neither left nor right. That's silly to them. Those are the tools they use. What they want is to scare everybody so that they will tolerate and even call for martial law to put an end to it. This is how they get the public to clamor for martial law. You see?
Would they have done this? If Donald Trump had not been elected, would they have still have done this?
Yes, they would have. But they would have had a different target. They would have thought of something else.
Had Hillary won, they would have gone after her in some way, I guess.
Probably not after Hillary, but they would have gone after something, and she would have been the leader of the attack.
Huh.
You see, there would still be violence in the streets because that's what they want. They want turmoil. I tell you what I think they would do. They would just continue to push the immigration, and they would get all these violent immigrants in here, and the people would have the same kind of demonstrations and threats and chaos. The word is chaos. They want to create chaos. You read that word over and over again in the newspapers, and hear the commentators use the word chaos, chaos, chaos. They're pounding that into our brains so that what do we do to put an end to the chaos? Well, we got to have martial law.
Yeah, that's right. Stay with us, Edward. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more about this. Plus, I want to get into why are they attacking the president the way they have been. I mean, the latest episode, of course, is whether somebody in the Trump administration, somebody, had dealings with a Russian bank. I want you to tell me if that's illegal. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to Coast, G. Edward Griffin with us. Ed, we were talking about chaos, but I want to get your thoughts on this situation with the Trump administration and the fact that somebody is saying that somebody at the Trump organization may have had some dealings with a Russian bank. What's wrong with that?
Well, I can't think of anything. I think the U.S. government deals with Russian banks all the time, doesn't it?
I think they do. I think everybody does.
Don't most of the corporations of America deal with foreign banks, including Russian banks? I think Chase Manhattan has banks in Russia and in China. This is part of the usual garbage to try and create discontent and horror in the minds of the people. And, it's phony. Let's just get to it. It's all theater, and it's designed to bring about discord and division and discredit anybody that stands in the way of this global dictatorship that they're trying to build.
Because
if you stand in the way, if you stand in the way, you have to be demonized constantly.
Right.
That's what we're witnessing.
Well, and what it's doing is it's pulling down the mood of the country. It's making us look foolish worldwide. And it is a public relations nightmare. You know, if I were running the PR for the United States right now, I'd say, we got a mess on our hands. We got to fix this. And I think that's part of what they're trying to do, to make us look so bad. And then they soften you up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that they really are interested in making the United States look bad, because one of the goals of these people that we've been talking about is to knock the United States down, bring it down so that it can be comfortably merged with the rest of the world.
Right. A couple notches. We're up too high right now, right?
We're up too high. Yeah. People are not humble enough, in their view, to take directions from the United Nations. We're too strong. We're America. You can't tell us what to do. But if we're on our knees begging for help and protection, if we're out of food, if our people are sick, if we've got riots in the street, if we've got economic collapse, if we've got terrorism, if we've got pornography, if we've got crime, if we've got drugs, well, we're on our backs and begging for help. Now we can be comfortably merged with the rest of the world.
Good point. What are we going to do about North Korea, Ed?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure we... Who's this we? The very
you and me, I guess.
This problem. You and I know what to do. First of all, we'd probably what would we do? Would we go and invade them? No, of course not. That's not what we're all about.
Send Dennis Rodman back to talk to Kim. Let him play a little basketball and say, "What are you doing here? You killed off your brother. Maybe, of course, he hasn't been proven, but it is.
Well, we had people like that in our own system. Why do we have to go to Korea to try and straighten things out? Why don't we fix things here? You know?
Well, he does have a nuke. He does have a nuke.
And so do we. Yeah. And this is not in the hands of people that are responsible to us.
It's crazy.
That's the problem.
The world has gone crazy.
Yeah.
What do you see as the biggest problem facing us right now? Federal Reserve? Bitcoins? Cash? What?
The biggest problem, and this may sound crazy, the biggest problem is that the average American is average. And that means he has or she has no creed. They don't know what they believe in. We don't know what we believe in. We have no creed. All of our enemies, all of the people who are doing these things that we're talking about, know what they want. It's a thing called collectivism. They want the state to be all powerful and the people to obey for their own good, supposedly. That's collectivism. They know what they want. We talk about freedom, and we want not to have collectivism, but we don't know what the opposite is. If you mention the word individualism to them, they'd look at you like, huh? What planet did you come from? They don't know what individualism means. They don't know that it's the constructive opposite of collectivism. In fact, they're not even sure what collectivism means. They think they know what socialism, communism, Nazism, and fascism means, but they don't realize that all of them are just variants of this thing called collectivism. And the thing that justifies all of this movement toward chaos that we're talking about is the idea among those who are leading that movement that we have to destroy everything, bring everything down to chaos so they can rebuild collectivism, this massive world state in which people are grateful to the government to take care of them and to protect them and defend them from all the chaos. And we have no creed. We have no idea we're even in a war. We think all this stuff is at random and that people doing it are crazy and they're making a big mistake. They don't realize that it's a plan. And we don't even know what the plan is. We're at war and we don't even know we're at war. No wonder we're losing.
Jeez. Back to the Federal Reserve for a little bit. It looks like they're going to raise interest rates again. How much control do they have over us, Ed?
Well, the Federal Reserve has total control over interest rates and money supply. That's what the Federal Reserve Act gives to them. And most people think it's a good idea because they don't understand that the Federal Reserve is not a government agency. They think that somehow it's responsive to the will of the people. We're back to that issue again. They don't realize that the Federal Reserve is a cartel, a private banking cartel, no different than a banana cartel or oil cartel. And so they think that the government or somehow the people themselves are running the Federal Reserve and making these decisions on interest rates and money supply and all that, somehow in the interest of the economy or in the interest of the American people. But once they understand that it's a banking cartel, and like all cartels, they have only one purpose, and that is to advance the interest of the members of the cartel, which means the Federal Reserve will always, always act in the best interest of the banks. And if that means the economy in second place or the American people in second place, that's what they will do.
What do you think of Bitcoin, Zed?
Well, I like Bitcoin, not as a replacement currency. I don't think it's an ideal currency. I still think that currency to be ideal should be backed by gold or silver, something that takes human effort to produce, not just a will of a politician or a banker. In other words, I think that money should be backed by something that takes human effort, has intrinsic value. But that aside, I like Bitcoin because it is forcing people to look at the difference between our fiat money system, which is infinite. It can be expanded an infinitely large balloon.
And just print it up.
Bring it up, yeah. Or a Bitcoin, which has built-in algorithms in the software that it limits the quantity. Therefore, a monetary system that is limited rises in value with the passage of time instead of going down in value. So I like it for that reason, because it causes people to think a little bit about the nature of money. But ultimately, I prefer something with intrinsic value, because
right.
Let's say that the internet goes down for whatever reason. You could think of six or seven good.
Oh, you're stuck. You're up a creek.
Yeah, you're up the creek. Your money disappears. It's vaporware. Okay, that's really enough for me. I think money should be something you can put in the mattress if you want to.
But they do want to do away with the cash, don't they?
Oh, yes. They want to do away with the cash because as long as people have cash, they can remain fairly private and independent of control. But once you aren't allowed to have cash and all of your money or so-called money or your units of exchange are in the banking system, then everything you do is recorded. And if you are fined by the government for any reason, you don't have to pay the government. The government just goes to the bank and says, this chap's money belongs to us, and they take it.
They take it.
And every transaction, whether you buy an automobile or a candy bar, goes to the bank and they get their little percentage off of it. So you're stuck. I mean, you are totally a monetary slave to the system at that point.
Is that ever going to change?
Not until we get rid of the system we have. We have a bunch of congressmen and senators that are totally obedient to all of this. But this is all coming from the banks, by the way, mostly from the banks, also from the government. But mostly the banks, and the banks are running the show in Washington. We've got the idea that somehow the politicians are controlling the banks. It's the banks are controlling the politicians. And as long as that system remains in place, I don't think anything's going to change. But that system can change. It's not necessarily going to be there forever. If the people wake up to the reality of what's really going on, it can change because they'll demand it. And these politicians who are now reading those checks that are being sent to them will start reading and counting the votes instead. And when that happens, it will change.
That'll be a problem indeed. Let's talk a little bit about your conference you had on global warming, an inconvenient lie. How did that go? How was it received?
That was one of the highlights of my life. As you can imagine, the title tells everything, Global Warming, an Inconvenient Lie. You don't have to explain that. And the whole purpose of the conference, George, as I think you know, was to bring together top scientists from around the world, literally, to expose all the myths or the lie of man-made global warming. You know, the science of that is very clear. And we put it all together. We had a full day of mostly scientific dissertations and explanations, PowerPoint presentations by really top scientists. I mean, these are professors of climatology and so forth. And they were from Princeton University, from University of Canada, and from one from the Space Agency and so forth. These people are having trouble in their own agencies because they're going upstream. But they're really top scientists. And anyway, they were all there. We had journalists there. We had teachers there. And we put together an all-day seminar that was recorded on video. And I'm just telling you, I don't care. As long as you're not blind, if you have an open mind at all, you will see when you hear all of these presentations that global warming is absolutely not caused by man. And that CO2 is a friendly gas, not a toxic gas. If anything, we need more CO2 in the atmosphere. This comes as a big surprise to a lot of people. They think that, oh, CO2, we got to have a carbon tax on it because it's terrible. We got to get rid of it. And in fact, these guys point out that historically, we know how much CO2 there was in the air back over a million years.
Oh, yeah. During the dinosaur era, we were loaded with it.
Yeah, and plants need it, and believe it or not, humans need it. Even though we exhale it, we need more CO2 in the atmosphere than we have today. And here these idiots are out there trying to convince us that we need to get rid of CO2, or they know they can't get rid of it, but they want to tax it. That's the real thing, you see.
It's all about the money, Ed. All about the
it's
money.
It's all about the money and the control. So anyway, we had a wonderful conference, and I hope that if anybody in your listening audience is curious about it and would like to see this video, this presentation all day, we're going to broadcast it free probably in about 2 or 3 weeks. It's all edited now and ready to go. Just come into our Freedom Force site, and there's a banner there. It's freedomforceinternational.org. And on the homepage, there's a banner that says Inconvenient Lie. And that is where you'll learn about the broadcast dates for this full-day seminar called An Inconvenient Lie.
Now, you've got another conference coming up but in a few months called the Red Pill Expo. What is that?
Well, I guess almost everybody knows about the Red Pill allegory that was made popular by the sci-fi movie called The Matrix some years ago.
Yes.
It's a wonderful allegory in which the mankind is living in a stupor. They are living in a world of illusion. They think they're leading normal lives, but they're not. They're all wired into some kind of global computer. Their brains are all wired up, and they're dreaming about, you know, being married, having children, working for a living, going on vacation, all of that stuff. But in reality, they're not. So can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Oh, okay. All of a sudden, my phone sounded like it went dead.
I thought, oh, boy. And you're on a cell phone right now. So I've had people sometimes talk to you for 10 minutes, and they realize you're not even there because you got disconnected. But you don't know that sometimes with a cell phone.
Yeah. And it just sounded there for a second that it was. But anyway, so where was I? I was talking about the red pill. And so we're going to put this all up on the internet. And so come to freedomforceinternational.org if you're interested in this topic. And on the homepage, there's a big red banner, and it says, or blue banner in this case, it says Inconvenient Lie. And then we switched over to the red pill. So that is in June, And well, you were talking about the Matrix. Okay, I'm back on track now. Forgive me on that. So, yeah, we're having people there. Everybody has a red pill. We've all discovered something that turned out to be an illusion that we have believed in most of our lives.
And it's
now
not.
We know. Yeah. I mean, all of us have that. And I know in my case, one of them was I learned back in the early 70s that cancer was not caused by something, but caused by the lack of something. And it was a diet, basically a dietary deficiency, and that it was easy to control. I mean, the first time I heard that, the person that told me that, I thought they were absolutely a lunatic, you know? So this was an illusion that I had. And finally, I realized that that was just an illusion, that cancer was not caused by a disease and that it was simple to control. And so I got the red pill taken away from me and all my life. And finally, I was able to swallow the red pill and I saw the truth. Okay, that's the allegory. And so we're having everybody with a red pill that they've discovered the reality coming to this event. And we have some marvelous speakers. We've got Lord Monckton that's already there. Hoping you'll be there, by the way, George.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
Work it out with Tommy. Yeah, see what, what my schedule is. He's the holder of my life right now.
So, yeah, well, you're in good hands. And I'll be speaking, and let's see, Robert Kiyosaki is going to be there, the author.
Oh, sure. I mentioned him. I mentioned him every night talking about the price of silver and his thoughts on that.
Yeah, Robert is a heck of a guy, and he'll talk about the illusion versus the reality of wealth. That's for sure. And so we have all of these great speakers. We're just lining them up now. And so if you want to know more information about that, you can come back to Freedom Force website, freedomforceinternational.org. And this time, look for that red banner. That's where I got confused a moment ago. And the red banner is the Red Pill Expo. And it'll tell you all.
You were on a Beyond Belief television show with me. You remember when we taped that? And people still talk about that. They still talk about
it. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was quite a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. At least two or three. At least two or three. When you talk about, though, the world without cancer, are you talking about the bitter apricot seeds and things like that? What's your push?
Well, I am. I'm talking about a substance that is in the apricot seeds. And that substance is a food factor. It's found in 1,400 edible plants.
Would that include almonds as well?
It would include natural almonds, what we now call bitter almonds.
Yes.
Trouble is, with almonds and like so many other foods, they've been hybridized to get rid of the bitter taste because we don't like bitter. And in doing so, we got rid of this very food factor that we're talking about. That's one of the reasons that the more modern society we have, the more advanced society, so-called, the more cancer we have, is because we're getting rid of the foods that have this natural substance in them. The name of it is called amygdalin. That's the official chemical name.
Amygdalin. Yep.
Amygdalin, yeah.
How did you find this out?
Well, I found out about that because a good friend of mine, who's a doctor in the San Francisco area, Dr. John Richardson, he's an MD, had a normal, nice practice, and started to use treatment for cancer that was based on amygdalin. And it was called Laetrile. And it still is called Laetrile, but its real name is amygdalin. And he started to save lives with it for the first time. And, you know, most doctors have a terrible record of not being able to save anybody. They treat them, but they can't save them. And John was no different than that. And so when he started to use amygdalin, like his record of success jumped from 0.001 to about 0.7, I mean, to 7.001. Huge difference.
Stay with us, Ed. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more and take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.